The world around us is swirling with lies. And at this time of year, people are focused on a worldly holiday called Christmas, and parents lie to their children that there's such a person as Santa Claus. People promote the mythology of a North Pole resident visiting every single home in the world at midnight at the beginning of December 25th. And we're expected to ignore the reality of math. A quick calculation, and I like math, is if Santa visited 3 billion homes, because there's 8 billion people on Earth, but if there's 3 billion homes, and if he took 10 minutes per home, it would take 5 million hours of precious Santa time. Now, at 2 minutes per home, Santa would have to make his delivery in only 1 million hours. Well, even if Santa decided that half or many of the 3 billion homes were naughty and not nice, and they didn't deserve presents, and only 1 billion homes would be visited at midnight, starting at the midnight of Christmas Day, it would still take over 330 million hours to make the deliveries. Somehow the math just doesn't seem to work out. Of course, we all know that the mythology of Santa Claus and Christmas is just that. It's mythology. But it's so much fun that people pretend, and they lie to themselves, and the lie keeps getting bigger. People pretend to believe that reindeer can fly, elves can make toys, and that Jesus Christ was born on December 25th. Now, today happens to be the winter solstice, where the time, where the sun has the least amount of daylight time as it will have in the year. And I just read an article this week that there were some flat earth people that decided to go to the South Pole. Because you see, the North Pole, it's dark for, 60 days, and the South Pole stays light for that same period of time. So they flew out on there just to prove it was a lie, and they found out the sun had just kind of circled around when they're on the South Pole, and never really set, and they were baffled, and they did an interview of the people that were with them, a journalist, and he said, well, sometimes in life you're wrong. It's really embarrassing when the flat earth thing didn't work out for them. Well, the biggest deception that people have is self-deception. They deceive themselves, they convince themselves of some falsehood, and then they continue believing the lie, and then they build around that myth. Well, today I want to title the message, Living Among Lies. Living Among Lies. Isn't that where we're all at? We're living among lies. If we take a look in Genesis 3:1, we can see the first big lie. In Genesis 3:1, and I'd like you to follow along with me for this first really big lie. Genesis 3:1, now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman told the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God said you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Sounds pretty serious. Verse 4, and the serpent said to the woman, you shall not surely die, for God knows the day that you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Wow. So we have somebody who directly contradicted what God said. Now, some of you know that I'm a native of Minnesota, and in Minnesota they have a very popular myth, and that is about Paul Bunyan. Now, he's a mythical logger. And it was popular as an advertising gimmick for a lumber company, the Red River Lumber Company, and it was over 100 years ago in the early 1900s, and they came up with this Paul Bunyan mythology, this giant logger, this big man, and he was accompanied by Babe the Blue Ox. They had to use an oxen to haul the logs out of the forest to the sawmill, and the stories about Paul Bunyan are as fantastic as you could imagine. Like, how could this possibly be true? Well, the campfire stories are purposeful exaggerations, as if it were a contest to see who could tell the wildest story. An example is, Minnesota has over 10,000 lakes because every place that Babe the Blue Ox walked, there was a footprint, and then a lake formed from that footprint around. So, you know, it's like that. Or Paul Bunyan was a character so big that he used small trees for toothpicks. There was no end of it. Now, my wife and I went up to Minnesota a few summers ago. We did a tour of north central Minnesota, and there were huge statues of this big Paul Bunyan lumberjack, and Babe the Blue Ox. In fact, I had my wife standing under the statue of the Babe the Blue Ox to take a picture. Bemidji and Brainerd, Minnesota are two of the cities that have competing statues of those mythical characters. Well, over the years, writers make up stories to add to the legend of Paul Bunyan. And, of course, as a child, I remember growing up about all of these things, about Paul Bunyan, Babe the Blue Ox, and all these cadre of fellow loggers and stories. There's even a Paul Bunyan restaurant in Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin, and you might imagine it has a lumberjack theme. I've eaten at that restaurant. I can't remember. It's been, what, quite a few years. I don't know if it's an all-you-can-eat or not, but it seemed that would fit. But nowadays, we have different mythology. Some of the mythology we hear about is a fellow called Chuck Norris. He's a martial arts expert and a TV and a movie star. And Chuck Norris is represented, although a real person, he's represented as a fantastic character who's smarter, stronger, and quicker than anyone else. And there pretty much isn't anything that Chuck Norris legend cannot do. And there are websites with Chuck Norris jokes. Example, Chuck Norris makes onions cry. Chuck Norris can make a fire by rubbing two ice cubes together. Or once a cobra bit Chuck Norris on the leg, and after 5 days of excruciating pain, the cobra died. I mean, or Chuck Norris was so mature at birth that he gave his mother a ride home from the hospital. I mean, the stories go on, and yet people will tell fantastic stories. But these are tales. These are mythology, made-up stories. They're entertainment. You're not really expecting to hear the truth. You're just expecting a myth with a punchline. The Bible speaks of a different kind of tale that people tell, a tale that purports to tell the truth, but the teller has designs to either propagate harm or damage to someone. Now, I'm not targeting this message to the local congregation, but rather to the world around us, because we are frequently swimming in lies, being deceived or misled by slander and libel. And I want to thank the local audience here, congregation, for being a studio audience. At the beginning of every court opinion, when the court issues a ruling and they have a court opinion or a court ruling that comes, what they will do is they will define the terms. And before we can talk about things that are in the ruling, he will say, here's the definitions of the terms. So the definition of tale: a made-up story or exaggerated story that may or may not be true. Slander is a spoken lie. Libel is a written lie. And a talebearer is one who transmits a slander or libel, whether knowingly or unknowingly. Now, not all tales are lies. Jesus Christ used parables to bring out the meaning of his message, to hide the meaning of the message to selected people. Well, I'm going to address the tales today that are false or hurtful, or both. First point is, talebearers are people who spread lies. A talebearer may be purposeful, but beyond purposeful, a talebearer can desire to cause harm. In Ezekiel 22 in verse 9, in you are men who slander to cause bloodshed. In you are those who eat on the mountains. In your midst they commit lewdness. In other words, there's people among us that will do things deliberately. The word lewdness can be translated wickedness, mischief, a heinous crime, or a wicked mind. But of course, you got to be careful nowadays. If you're looking up definitions, you got to look up more than one place for definitions. I had an internet meme came across my news feed. And it said, if you say the word orange very slowly, it sounds like gullible. I tried it. okay. Genesis 3:1. If we look back, and the serpent said, that you shall not surely die. Big lie. Contradicting what God said. But how do we know that Satan told a lie? In John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes on him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Well, wait a minute. If Satan said we're not going to die, why would Jesus Christ say, if you do this, you will have everlasting life? Meaning, life isn't everlasting unless you qualify according to his word. In Ezekiel 18, verse 4, behold, all souls are mine. The soul of the Father as well as the soul of the Son is mine. The soul who sins shall die. So not everybody is going to live. Those who are sinners do not have everlasting life. And we know who the sinners are because we turn to Romans 3:23. And Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So that pretty well narrows it down. Everybody is going to die unless they do something that God instructs them to do. In Hebrews 11, verse 13, is called the faith chapter. It's called the faith chapter, and it's a recitation of important personages that throughout history, God worked through them. In Hebrews 11, 13, what does it say? These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Satan desires to limit the opportunities of mankind to join the family of God. So Satan becomes the chief talebearer with evil intent. Now, in John 6, verses 43 and 44, we know that Jesus was speaking to those who were not believing what he said. Ever talk to somebody who looks at you kind of sideways, not believing what you say? John 6, and starting in verse 43, why do you not understand my speech? Because you are not able to listen to my word? Verse 44, you are of your father, the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He, meaning the devil, was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there's no truth in him. He who speaks a lie speaks from his own resources, for he's a liar and the father of it. Now, the chief talebearer or the chief liar is Satan, and there are others that follow in his path. If we turn to 1 Kings 21, we read about Ahab's wife, Jezebel. Jezebel is not really somebody that you find a lot of little girls being named today when they're born. And they idealize this wonderful opportunity for my little sweet daughter, and I'm going to name her Jezebel. There's a reason for that, because she has an evil history. In 1 Kings 21:8, and the backstory here is that Ahab looked out of his palace and he saw a vineyard. And he said, I really want that vineyard. And so he offered to buy it from a man named Naboth. Naboth said, I'm not selling it. I don't care who you are. I'm not selling the vineyard. And Ahab was pretty morose about it. Naboth wouldn't sell the vineyard. And so what does Jezebel say? Leave it to me. I'll take care of it. And so in 1 Kings 21 and verse 8, she, Jezebel, wrote letters in Ahab's name, sealed them with a seal, and sent letters to the elders and nobles who were dwelling in the city with Naboth. In other words, all the people around him. She wrote in the letters saying, proclaim a fast and seat Naboth with high honor among the people. And well, that's pretty big stuff. With the queen says, honor this person, have a fast. And what follows a fast? Follows a feast. And he's going to be honored. In other words, there's something really special about this person. So in other words, everybody's going to come. In that town, she carries on with her instructions and seat two men, scoundrels, before him to bear witness against him, saying, you have blasphemed God and the king, and then take him out and stone him that he may die. It was a setup. So two liars come in. Naboth is praised, and the liars step up and say and give false witness that Naboth is blaspheming God and the king. So you catch the religious people and the people who are honoring the king, and they went out and they stoned Naboth to death. And Jezebel turned to Ahab, her husband, King Ahab, and said, now go take the vineyard. She arranged it through a series of lies. So point one, that talebearers are purposeful and beyond purposeful, They desire to cause harm. Point two, the Bible reveals commands about being a talebearer. The Bible reveals commands about being a talebearer. There's two explicit commands not to be a talebearer. Leviticus 19:16 is the first one. It says, don't be a talebearer. It says it's flat out. Leviticus 19:16, you shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. So we're directly told, just don't go be telling wild stories against the life of your neighbor. The second instruction, explicit command about talebearers, is in Proverbs 20, verse 19. In Proverbs 20, 19, he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. Remember that definition we talked about, slander, earlier? Willing to tell lies verbally? Well, I guess you could also do it with libel, writing a lie. That's what Jezebel did. We're warned here in Proverbs 20, verse 19, not to associate with such persons. In Jeremiah 6:28 gives us a little bit more insight. They're all grievous revolters, walking with slanders. They are brass and iron. They are all corruptors. What happens if you mix brass and iron? They don't mix. They don't hold. They're not. They don't amalgamate readily. So brass and iron combined don't make a strong metal. Now, the King James Version translates Strong's H7400, the Hebrew word number 7400, in the following manner, that is used up here when don't associate with one who flatters with his lips. It's slander, talebearer, one who carries tales, a scandal monger, one who travels about to bear those lies. Now, some people, they have a reputation for being a talebearer or a gossip. And if you want to spread a story, those are usually the best people to pick if you want a story spread, because they're always eager. We have government agencies, usually three-letter agencies, and they know who to tell, who can spread this lie, and they know who to tell, whether it's in the media or elsewhere, in order to plant a particular story. I'm reminded of the story of three clergymen were out in a boat fishing, and they were confessing their faults to one another because they couldn't tell anybody else, but the three clergymen each had different churches, so they're out in a rowboat, and they're out fishing, and the first clergyman says, I really got to admit, sorry, I've got a drinking problem, and, I just can't tell anybody. It's a tough one. And they said, okay, fella, maybe we can help. We'll see what we can do. And then the second clergyman says, I hate to say it, but I've got a gambling problem. I just can't quit gambling, and I can't tell anybody about it. And he says, okay, we're on your team. We can help. And the third clergyman says, I understand you guys. He said, my problem is gossip. I got a terrible gossip problem, and I can't wait to get on shore and get on Facebook. Because people have an urgency to spread the lies. So point two is the Bible reveals commands about being a talebearer. First, don't. And then second, don't associate with those who are. Third point, people are susceptible to lies because they like to hear tales, whether or not they're true. Juicy little tidbits, right? People are susceptible to lies because they like to hear tales. On a cold day, have you ever had a nice hot cup of warm cocoa? Just real warm. It goes right down on the inside and makes you feel really good. In Proverbs 18, verse 8, the words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the innermost body. Now, if we take a look at the word talebearer here in Proverbs 18:8, it's Strong's H5372 that's translated talebearer or whisperer. Notice somebody wants to tell something nasty about somebody, they'll pull them off and they'll whisper it. So it could mean to murmur or to whisper or backbiter. And if we look at Proverbs 18:8, and then we jump ahead, eight chapters, Proverbs 26:22, it repeats the exact same verse. The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles. They go down into the inmost body. You know why God has repetition in the Bible? It's really not complicated. And let me put this in Southern Texas. Y'all didn't hear me very well the first time, so you morons better listen up. So I got to say it again. Well, and they've got to simply repeat it so that people get the message. Now, a tale can repulse somebody with reference to the senses, especially the sense of taste or odor. Now, when I was 5 years old, everybody goes to country school, except their country school didn't have a kindergarten. So my parents, yes, I went to one-room country schoolhouse. That was in first grade. But before that, there was no kindergarten. It was just being invented way back when. And so my parents took me to the nearby town, 8 miles away, and I went to the kindergarten there. And then that was a half day. So at noon, we didn't have lunch there at school. Kindergartners got out, and then I walked at age 5, 3 blocks to Grandpa and Grandma's house in town. Town days, I don't suppose you trust your 5-year-old to walk 3 blocks. And I started in the wintertime because I turned 5 just before the beginning of the year. And I got to Grandpa and Grandma's house and bravely walked my 3 blocks, think nothing of it, just like walking across the farm. And I got there, and they had a visitor. It was a shirt-tail relative. And he was sitting at the table, and he had a glass of beer. And it was, you know, apple juice colored and had white foam on it. And I'm 5 years old. I'd never seen this. There wasn't anything like that in our house. So I asked if I could have a taste. And they laughed. And Grandma got out of one of these little juice glasses, poured a little bit in, and I was a big shot. I was 5 years old, and I tasted it. And I made a decision at that time that there was no need in my life to ever taste beer again, because it was probably some of the worst taste that I had ever had. I couldn't see why anybody would want that. And it was very memorable. I remember now, you know, and I was 5 then. I made the same decision with strawberries, not because of the taste, but you know those little tiny seeds in strawberries? They got stuck between my teeth, and I'm a little kid, and I can't get those things out. It was terrible. I was 20 years old before I ate another strawberry from age 5. I just couldn't stand the thought. So it makes an impact, whether it's the taste or smell of something. People, so point 3, people are susceptible to lies because they like to hear tales whether or not they're true. Now, point 4 is a tale will not spread if it's not repeated. A tale will not be spread if it's not repeated. In Proverbs 26, verse 20, where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And when there's no talebearer, the strife ceases. I don't know if any of you have a wood stove or a fireplace. What happens if you don't feed it? If you've got a wood stove or a fireplace, the house is going to get cold, right? Because you're not putting wood in to keep the fire burning. And it's the same thing with a lie or a tale. Now, it's attributed to Mark Twain and Winston Churchill, often attributed, but a remark in a newspaper article written by Jonathan Swift in 1710 has this quote, "A lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes." Lies go quick. It'll get home before you do. Okay, it's going to happen, whereas the truth, much slower to follow up. In James 3, starting in verse 5, and these verses in James are famous about the use of the tongue. In James 3, 5, "Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest fire a little fire kindles? And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity or sin. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and can set on fire the course of nature. Wow. One little lie can take off and light, as it were, the whole forest, a big forest fire. Driving along on I-40, had gone to my uncle's place southwest of Oklahoma City many years ago, 20 years ago or so, and coming back home, it was very dry, it was right after Thanksgiving, and it looked like the world was on fire in eastern Oklahoma on I-40. Man, there were flames up everywhere, much higher than the, and I thought, I guess we won't be going that way, but oh look, you know, you could see the reflection in the sky, but it looked like there was a lull, but by the time we got right up to it, all of a sudden I saw flames on both sides, flames in the median. The flames had jumped over the highway. Pretty nervous. We were able to drive through it. But it likely started with some little, seemingly innocent flick of a lit cigarette, something like that. I know one year I followed, was out, same on I-40, headed out to Arizona, and somebody had a chain dragging behind the car on the trailer, you know, the little safety chains, and it was causing sparks. So Oklahoma was on fire following everywhere this car went, and the sparks would dance off into the ditch and burn that way. I got to stay off that highway, I can see that. But that's what James is talking about. It only takes a little spark. It only takes a little bit, meaning a little lie can go a long ways. The Pareto principle, I don't know how many of you are aware of that. It's called the 80-20 rule. You may have heard of that one. It's an Italian economist, Pareto, in the late 1800s. Italy wasn't really united as one country. It was a whole series of monarchies and Vatican-controlled states. And they united in 1861. And an economist says, you know what? 80% of the land is owned by 20% of the people. The nobles own the most of the land and so forth. And then people kept writing about this characteristic of human behavior, where 20% of something controls 80% of the outcome. Well, that's true, I found in my business, that 20% of my customers years ago, they gave me 80% of my business. So 1,000 customers, 200 of them were my bread and butter customers that gave me the bulk of the business. 20% of my salesmen produced 80% of the results. The worst 20% of my customers gave me 80% of my headaches. I mean, it's just that way. Well, there's the Sugarman Corollary. Joseph Sugarman wrote a book about the Pareto Principle. And he said if we get rid of the offending 20%, the non-productive 20%, our profitability will increase 30%. And he laid this all out, and me being an economist, very interested in that, followed it through, and I thought, you know, that works. You could, if you're in business and you get rid of the whiners and the complainers and the fussers, you'll have less business, but your profits are going to go up because you're not spending 80% of your time doing that. Well, what do people spend a lot of time doing? Fighting lies. Every day we're surrounded by lies. So point four is a tale will not spread if it is not repeated. A tale will not spread if it's not repeated. Point five, just because you know the truth does not mean you have to spread that truth around. Like the three clergymen that were out on the boat, confessing to each other. Just because you know something doesn't mean you have to say something. In Proverbs 11:13, a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. Why would somebody keep quiet about something? Because they're respectful of the other person. They don't want to make life worse for themselves or for other people. If we take a look, at Proverbs 25 and verse 2. In Proverbs 25, verse 2, of course, our goal is to have the mind of God, to bring that into our lives each and every day. In Proverbs 25, verse 2, it is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. God has the capacity to forgive and forget. People, not so much. People remember that time when, and then fill in the blank. Remember 43 years ago when I said XYZ and you didn't do it? Well, now you're paying the price. I mean, it's just the memories go on forever. But what does God do? He will conceal a matter. In fact, he's so good at it that we really shouldn't remind him of the forgiven sins. Just let it go, because God did. And so it's his glory to conceal a matter. But what do people do? They want to just blurt out everything. Make life hard. So sometimes the most loving thing to do is to keep our mouth shut. There's a value to confidentiality, and confidences build trust. So point five, just because you know the truth does not mean you have to spread that truth around. Now, following up on that one in point six, there's always somebody that's going to say, hey, wait a minute. So I'm going to come up with point six. Is concealing a matter akin to lying by withholding the truth? Some people say, well, half the truth is still a lie. And so therefore they blurt out things that are harmful to other people. We have to give thought of the consequences of our words before we speak. In Proverbs 12:23, and this echoes what we heard in Proverbs 25:2, but Proverbs 12:23, a prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. That's pretty awkward, because how many times have we heard somebody talking nonsense? And they keep repeating it, and the more nonsense it is, the louder they get. We simply can't believe everything that we hear or that we read. In Proverbs 18, verse 17, the first one to plead his cause seems right. Isn't that true? If somebody comes and tells you something just really nasty about somebody, our inclination is to believe what somebody else told us. But what is the last half of the verse? Until his neighbor comes and examines him. Let's look at the whole picture here. Wait a minute. Let's look at what led to this. Let's see everything that's going on. It was some years ago, I don't know if it's 5 years ago or more, a new governor was elected in Virginia. And he described, he was medical doctor, was elected the governor, and he described the process of post-birth abortion. And what you do is you take a baby that you don't want, and you put him over on a tray over there, and you just let it die. Because you didn't want that baby to live, but the abortion didn't work out, so we call it post-birth abortion. And this newly elected governor was a medical doctor. In fact, he was a pediatrician who had delivered many babies. Well, the governor's medical school colleagues from years ago, they were shocked. They were aghast. They knew this, but they had concealed the truth about this newly elected governor. And then it was too late. Then all of a sudden he was in the governor's seat, and he was supporting infanticide or post-birth abortion. And they testified of the governor's actions while in medical school many years before. And that's when people started calling for this newly elected governor to resign. They withheld the truth. Now, newspapers and radio and television are full of stories about political events and political intrigue. And at that time, it was a three-ring circus about the governor supporting post-birth abortions, which is just another word for infanticide. And it's so irrational that it's hard to imagine anybody could be for it. So point six is concealing a matter akin to lying by withholding the truth. And the answer would be, we have to use wisdom when decide what to conceal and what to reveal. Point seven. We live in a world where we must be careful, because slanderers are everywhere. In Jeremiah 9, verses 3 through 5, in Jeremiah 9, 3 through 5, "And like their bow, they have bent their tongues for lies." You know, on a bow and arrow, and the bow is generally about as tall as the person, and you pull the bowstring back, it bends the bow, it's ready to fire then when fitted with an arrow. "They've bent their tongues for lies." In other words, they're all ready to tell a lie. They're prepared. "They are not valiant for the truth on earth, for they proceed from evil to evil." Last part of the verse, "They do not know me, says the Lord." Verse 4, "Everyone take heed to his neighbor and do not trust any brother, for every brother will utterly supplant, every neighbor will walk with slanderers," meaning if they're given to that. "Everyone will deceive his neighbor and not speak the truth. They will have taught their tongue to speak lies. They weary themselves to commit iniquity." Of course, Jeremiah is prophesying about end times. So point 7, we live in a world where we must be careful. Slanderers are everywhere. So today, we've looked at living among lies. And the first point was talebearers are purposeful. And beyond purposeful, they desire to cause harm. And in this point, we think of Satan and Satan's influence. Point 2, the Bible reveals commands about being a talebearer. Don't be a talebearer. Don't associate with talebearers. Point 3, people are susceptible to lies because they like to hear tales, whether or not they're true. Point 4, a tale will not spread if it's not repeated, just like a fire will go out if you don't put wood on it. Point 5, just because you know the truth does not mean you have to spread that truth around. Point 6, we are to use wisdom when deciding what to conceal and what to reveal. And point 7, we live in a world where we must be careful because slanderers are everywhere. I suppose you wondered if we would get through this message without referencing the Ten Commandments. Some years ago, I'm teaching a high school class, and a high school student comes up and said, we have an assignment from our psychology class. We're supposed to interview people over age 65. Are you over age 65? And if so, would you answer some questions? And they said, if you could snap your fingers to make this a better world, what would you wish for? I thought, well, that's an interesting question to ask. And so I had an immediate answer. I said that everyone would keep the Ten Commandments. Now, they have to write these things down because they're going to turn in the paper. I was met with stunned silence. Apparently, it never occurred to these young people that if everyone kept the Ten Commandments, that this would be a better world. They were somewhat shocked. And of course, that included Exodus 20, verse 16, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." The bottom line is, let's not contribute to Satan's big lie, nor we should succumb to Satan's proclivity to deceive. Mr. Scott.